Okay, so now I would start an interview with Pedro Fialho. Pedro is from Portugal. He is head of people, business at Fartech, and this is focused on tech teams. So technology sector is one of the driving sectors, and sure has to do with remote work. He supports business in the implementation of several HR policies. So this is interesting. What we were talking right now or hearing right now can be an input for HR policies and processes. Yeah. He is also thinking or promoting and developing continuous improvement. So this is, let me say, a pathway we have here. We are not separating excellence from decent work, from well-being, from work-life flow. We understand it together. He is also professor at the university. In the same time, he is father or has two children, and a tech enthusiast. So you see, he himself probably is living the topic of work and life and flow and conflict and balance as an individual too. So Pedro, when you are ready, and if you would like to add something to my explanation, feel free. And then I would start, talking with you.
we can start whenever we want. Just want to say hello to everyone. Thank you very much for joining and being here. And I wanted to say thank you to all the previous presentations, which were really, really insightful. And of course, thank you for inviting me, for being here. So I'm as I said, I'm here in the role of a practitioner, even though, as some of you on this call know, I'm actually a bit of a hybrid myself, because I also teach at the university, actually at two universities, and I also do some research, which usually connects to hybrid, remote, and presential work. So yeah, I'm going to get everything all mixed up. Please bear with me, but I hope we can make this an interesting discussion.
Thank you very much that you accepted this invitation. We are really happy to have you here. So my first question would be, on how many days do you think employees should work? We should work in total. Yeah.
Okay. So I will start by introducing here two concepts which for me are key and are going to drive us through, I think, all of this conversation around working models and how this works. So for me, the two key aspects would always be autonomy and flexibility. Autonomy in the sense of almost of empowerment, you know, in the sense of making sure that the company realizes that they need to give us, the employees, and me as the HR practitioner, I need to give my employees some room to make their own decisions, to see what works best for them. And this also, in my view, is a great demonstration of trust, in the sense of, if I as a company show to my employees that I do give you guys the autonomy and the space to make your own decisions on how you organize yourselves, on how you manage your work, then it shows that I trust you. You know, trust requires putting myself in a position of vulnerability. So I am putting myself in a position of vulnerability as a company. And then my second key concept would be flexibility, meaning different things will work for different people at different moments. And this is really something that companies need to embrace somehow. Coming back to your question around how many days per week, given these two concepts, I think the answer will be, it depends, right, on the person. My personal view is that it really works very well to do something between 2 and 3 days per week at the office. Personally, I usually do two, just because it's really important to have the personal connections, and going to the office is really important towards that. However, as well, because of, you know, work-life flow and the ability to have other commitments outside of work, namely with kids, and also having more focused time, kind of time to do analytics, to work on different aspects, kind of do deep work, it works better this way. So if I plan out that I will be at the office for 2 days, typically I'll have 1 day that I will be very much focused on meeting with my stakeholders, so with people from the business with whom I interact, and another day which is very much focused on interacting with my team and other teams in HR. So, and then the other 3 days I can split however it works. So yeah, that's typically what works for me, and within my team, that's usually the model we adopt around 2 days.
Okay, thank you. Very interesting. So the arrangements, yeah, tell us a bit about the arrangements regarding your company. Are employees happy with this? What do you feel? What you observe? What you perceive?
Okay, so I'll start. I'll have to take a couple of steps back. So Farfetch is a tech company, but not exclusively a tech company. We're actually a bit more similar to Amazon in the sense of we have like a third of our company is tech profiles. So all of our developers, data people, data scientists, all of those profiles that we typically associate to tech. And then around 2/3 of the company actually are very much operational roles. This goes from customer service to logistics to warehouse to, you know, a lot of different functions. And what we need, and that's probably the biggest challenge we have at Farfetch, is how do we find a model that actually works for everyone? We have like 40 different job subfamilies, you know, so meaning different. A subfamily would be like really something substantially different that people do. And we have around 40 of those, like a few hundred job profiles. So it's really tough to find that balance. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to focus essentially on the tech teams. So what we are doing, because some of this means, just to be clear why, this means that some of our teams don't really have this autonomy to be able to choose, right? When you're talking about warehousing, when you're talking about modeling, you know, you cannot do modeling remotely. Maybe you can, I don't know how. But a few teams don't have this mandate to be at the office because of their requirements. In tech, it's not the case. So I'll focus there, and that's also my scope of activity. Here, I think we see a very different experience across the board. There are some teams which are usually quite happy with the approach of being able to go to the office sometimes. We don't have an enforcement at this stage. We have a recommendation for people to be at the office around 2 times per week as a recommendation, but we're not enforcing nor are we controlling. So we are just keeping an eye on how things are going and the reactions. And what we see actually is people who adopt this very strongly, you know, and they will really take it to heart and make sure that they create those moments. We have teams that go way beyond this. So they just go to the office every single day. That we have a few of those. And we do have teams that will probably be not attending the office like for weeks on end. And so it really fluctuates, which is why I kind of smiled when you asked me how people react to this, because I have the full spectrum of reactions possible. What we do know, and what's very, very clear, regardless of this, but for us, what's very clear is that the autonomy and flexibility points come up. So if we have this as a recommendation, you know, be at the office around 2 times, people can manage. Some will be, you know, grumbling because we have this recommendation. Some just don't care and just don't show up. Others will be there all of the time. But the moment we decide to make this mandatory is the moment in which we are going to have a significant problem. Not because it changes their habits necessarily, because most of them are actually going to the office often. It's just because we remove this autonomy component.
Yeah.
Okay. And giving people the impression, not the impression, the actual power to make their decisions rather than imposing what they should do. It's tough, especially when you've given it and remove it. It's one thing to never have it, as we all know, and another thing to then have it removed. And then there's also the concept of flexibility, to be clear, which is something that we've been working with our teams. And we still find very much on the ground this perception that going to the office means being there from 9 to 6, as if it was 2019. Mm-hmm. And it's not the case at all. You know, flexibility can still remain even when you go to the office. And we've been reinforcing that message. Even our chief people officer a few weeks ago was in a call saying, you know, just showing what her habits were. She usually, when she goes to the office, she arrives at 10:30, 11, because she has to drop off the kids before she does meetings with in-person, all of that stuff. And she leaves at like 4:30 because she has to pick up the kids as well. And she will come back to work, as we all do, in different moments. But it actually fits very well, this concept of work-life flow. It's not a matter of doing, you know, the separations. It's what works for you. It's making sure that you fit in all of those demands and you know, you fit them in whenever they work. Of course, this requires, also someone brought up the topic of job crafting. Of course, this requires having a substantial amount of ability to define what I do, how I do it, and when I do it, of course, which fits with the autonomy part, which is why it's much easier for me to talk about this when I manage tech teams than if I were managing a factory team, in which it's substantially different, right? But still, in these fringes of the population in which we do have this ability, it's also interesting that we're now having to kind of break this mental barrier of, if I go to the office, I still have, you know, I forfeit my flexibility in terms of schedule. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah. I understand. this approach, no, when it was developed, did you do this from the point of HR strategy, not practices or policies, strategy? Mm-hmm. Did you involve your employees from the beginning, a kind of bottom-up approach, or how was it done?
Okay, so I don't even know what to call it. It's somewhere between bottom up and top down. So it's probably middle out. So what we did essentially was, we had been monitoring, and we have a yearly survey on organizational climate, and we've also developed an internal survey, which we did especially during 2021, 2022, at the height of the pandemic. An internal study focusing very much on a few well-being aspects. And what we started to see on those results when, you know, things were opening up again, was that people who went back to the office at least 2 times per week were actually having higher scores on engagement, and typically higher scores on, you know, I will call it all of the protective variables, stuff like psychological safety and all of that, and better scores as well on depression, anxiety, so better in the sense of lower. Okay. So we started seeing those signals even before we were kind of being very pushy on what to do. Okay, so this is what led us to issue this recommendation of twice per week at the office, is because we saw this. However, there is one point of this which, to be honest, we haven't been able to untangle, and I'm not sure how we do, which is the our classical difference between causality and correlation, right?
Yeah.
Are the people who are going to the office because they are engaged, or are they engaged because they're going to the office? And there's really no clear way at this stage for us to understand what's the case. There really isn't. At least that we've been able to ascertain. So we're still, this makes it very hard for us to kind of take that additional step of, you know, let's make it more strict or more clear. Let's try to enforce a little bit the going to the office because we are being protective. Because one, we don't know if it's causation or correlation, mm-hmm. and two, we know the impact that this has on autonomy, and we know that this will hurt us somehow in mm-hmm. the immediate term.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when I hear you have this widespread practice, how do you think is it best possible to coordinate the people? Because you have to coordinate remote workers with persons in the office mm-hmm. in different moments, in different ways, for different deadlines, etc., etc. The coordination mechanisms, what would you say, which works best, which kind of coordination mechanisms in your experience, and was it necessary to train people for this crafting and for this coordination?
Okay. So typically tech teams already have a few very set rituals that they usually, coming from the agile methodologies, that they follow, which allows them to coordinate. So usually they'll have a couple of moments in which they will do the what they call the stand-ups, and they'll have a few different moments in which they will coordinate and see where they stand, which actually is the foundation for their ability to job craft. Because since those kind of milestones and moments are set, that means everyone knows exactly when they will be kind of reporting where they are and where others are, so that they can continue to coordinate. So I would say the coordination issue in tech was solved before this problem arose, which actually made things a lot easier, which is actually part of what's causing the difficulty in getting people back to the office, because they didn't feel an impact in their output. You know, they just kept working in the same way. Now they're just in each one in their home, and they each gained 1 hour per day because they don't have to travel to the office. And so that's also caused those challenges. And in terms of having to train people for this, it was mm-hmm. very limited in the sense of, because the rituals themselves already existed. I think it was very much a matter of ensuring a few technology best practices. You know, mm-hmm. for instance, one of the challenges we already had as well, and most tech companies have and had before the pandemic, was that teams were already geographically spread anyway. Uh-huh. So they already had to have a few non-in-person moments. What we kind of made sure that managers did was make sure that, you know, imagine that we have a team of 10 in which 8 people are allocated to a specific office, but 2 of them are in different, you know, one is in Brazil, one is in the US. We just reinforced with them to make sure that, look, don't do stuff like stuffing 8 people in a meeting room and then having the other 2 join remotely. That's a terrible experience. People just get lost, communication gets affected, and you will lose very significant contributions. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just adopted those rules of one remote, all remote, for instance. You know, if we're doing a collaboration work in which people are not in person, then everyone should be remote, just to make sure that communication.
So no hybrid meetings.
Basically, we try to avoid them as much as possible because
of technical reasons. Yeah,
any of us who's been in a hybrid meeting knows exactly why we avoid those. Right? So, if anyone has a good experience, please let me know. We reinforce that, but while at the same time, the fact that a part of the team is at the office still allows for that, you know, for those additional moments of collaboration, of additional coordination and all of that. And we also need to make sure that, okay, so one of the teachings that we shared was make sure one remote, all remote. 2, make sure that any decisions which are made offline are somehow documented online. You also don't want to go into a situation in which the 2 people who weren't there, they were super included in the meeting and all of that, but then everyone else went to have lunch, and when they came back, the product had changed into something different, or they were now using a new technology. And that's just weird, right? Mm-hmm. So we just made sure that people understood these nuances of communication. And to be honest, it's something that worked well, but it's also a challenge that still exists. You know, it will always take it's very hard to prevent two people who are kind of having a brainstorming at some point during lunch, not to just, you know, move forward and start implementing and not wait for the people who are in the Asia Pacific time zone who are asleep now, or people like we have on this call who are in the, the Central America call and in time zone and are still kind of waiting or should be still asleep. So we just make sure that we keep on reinforcing this message and continue to gather feedback from our employees to make sure that they feel heard and that they feel psychological safety, meaning that they feel that they have the space to share.
Okay. If I understood correctly, I would say even if there is autonomy, even if there is flexibility, some orientative rules, shared rules, have to be. Coordinate, correct?
Even if we don't call them rules per se, but we just call them guidelines.
Let me call it differently.
We call it whatever we want because my people kind of react a bit to the word rules, but we call them guidelines.
I don't like it, but
suggestion. We still have to have something in place. Also, just something that just came up. It also helps with a sense of fairness, you know, in which people feel that okay, fine. I'm being requested to do this, this, and this, and the other team is not doing things in an entirely different way and you know, and managing stuff in an entirely different way. So it just makes it feel like, okay, it's the far-fetched way of doing things, it's our approach, and it's fair across the board.
And what also for me came out is that trust and confidence and commitment are very important in such a context to guide. Let me say, interpersonal soft coordination mechanisms, values. Is this correct?
Yes, understood correctly? Absolutely.
From your experience. Personally, we can have this opinion, but talking about your experiences, no?
No, yeah, for sure. And actually, one of the things, if that really reflects on the psychological safety aspect. You know, psychological safety kind of requires an amount of trust to be there. And and 3 years ago, maybe none of our managers had heard about psychological safety. At this moment, everyone knows what it is. We've had formal training around it. We keep assessing psychological safety and using this as a concept, which brings the whole thing around being able to trust, being able to give autonomy, being able to give space. And once again, it really brings this sense of kind of fairness and fair treatment across the board, which really helps.
To finish, was there something that worked differently from what you was expecting?
Yes, there is always a few things. I will highlight two things. One is before the pandemic, Farfetch had in Portugal the reputation of having probably the best offices in the country and having really like a very, very good in-office experience. As we are coming back, that's not the case anymore. Not because the other ones have evolved, but because it was not built for hybrid work. So the quality of experience at the office went down, and we lived in this magical world in which we thought, people will start going back to the office and they'll be super happy because this is amazing. It's really not anymore. The requirements have changed, and that it took us also a little bit to understand that. And the second point that kind of surprised us, not if we go digging deep into it, but kind of on the surface level surprised us, is we all have probably, and we keep hearing in the news and all that stuff, this perception that the younger generations are very much, you know, remote first, and I, you know, if I never have to go to an office in my whole life, I'll be a happy person, all of that stuff. The people who we had complaining the most about not going to the office were our junior profiles, because they are the ones who are actually losing a bunch of learning opportunities from just sitting next to people who know a lot more about this stuff than they do. And when you have situations in which the whole team is remote, these kind of learning by osmosis almost, they have to be very deliberate. You have to jump into a call with the other person who's doing their work, but you're kind of sitting there. It's really weird. But Not if you're in the office, it's just organic, you know, you're doing your stuff. Someone next to you is working on something else. Interactions happen at lunchtime and all of those learnings happen. And the junior profiles were really feeling left out of that. And that was a very, very interesting finding for us. So something as well that kind of is making us speed up a little bit our communication on. It's important mm-hmm. to go back to the office because we're actually, you know, we know that many of you feel that this, you know, things are working well, all of that, but we're actually kind of almost actively hurting a fraction of our team, which is, you know, actually going to be the future workforce of the team.
So thank you very much, Pedro. Very, very interesting for me, and I hope for everyone, a rich experience with this context. So thank you very much.